It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We turn to Capitol Hill as the Senate returns from the April recess on Monday and is set to tackle a number of legislative priorities. We check in with Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, and you can be part of the conversation at any point. Call in with the question, add your views at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Senator Johnson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Morning, Kate. Hope you're doing well.
I am. Well, let's start with Tuesday's spring election in Wisconsin. What are some of your takeaways?
Well, I was very happy to see the two referendums passed that basically ban Zuckerbucks and make sure that only election officials designated by law can run elections. So we don't have, for example, you know, Zuckerbucks paying for taking over the Green Bay election system. So I thought that was very positive. But I don't have the total analysis in terms of how many school board members that we picked up as Republicans, as conservatives. So I'm kind of waiting for those. But I thought the main issue there really was the two referendum, and they passed with very strong support. I was happy about that.
Could the referendums create any issues for local clerks in November because they rely on volunteers to help run elections? And, you know, if you have an amendment that says only election officials designated by law can administer elections, does that get thorny for these election clerks?
I doubt that's going to impact volunteers because, again, you have the election clerks running those. Again, who knows what crazy things might happen from this. But, again, this is positive. Again, this is a reaction to what happened in 2020, you know, all the irregularities, you know, election clerks improperly carrying ballots, as I said, what happened in Green Bay, balloting in the park in Madison, what happened in nursing homes. I mean, I know the left completely denies that there were problems with the 2020 election. There are all kinds of problems. This is one way to start resolving at least one of them.
Former President Donald Trump visited Green Bay for a rally Tuesday, and we have a new Marquette University poll out this week. National Survey of Registered Voters finding President Joe Biden and former President Trump each to be the choice of 50% of registered voters. Among likely voters, Biden receives 52%, Trump at 48%. Is Trump spending enough time in Wisconsin a battleground state?
Oh, I'm sure President Trump will be here frequently during the campaign. You know, his time has been spent based on the order of the primaries, and he came obviously for Wisconsin's primary. But I'm hoping that the Wisconsinites are understanding and have their eyes open to what a disaster Democratic governance has been. I've often said if you were to devise or be asked to devise a strategy to destroy this country, you'd be hard pressed to come up with a better game plan than what President Biden and his allies in Congress are doing. The open border, a 40-year high inflation caused by massive deficit spending. A dollar we held at the start of the Biden administration is only worth 84 cents. The war on fossil fuels driving up the cost of the gasoline and energy. The embarrassing and dangerous surrender in Afghanistan, which emboldened people like Putin and Xi and the Ayatollah. So, listen, our country's on a very dangerous path, and I'm hoping Wisconsinites understand that and certainly don't vote to reelect President Biden.
We'll get to the economy in just a bit, but one more takeaway here from Tuesday, Nikki Haley receiving over 76,000 votes. What are your thoughts on a divided GOP there?
My guess is the GOP will become very united in November because they realize, again, what a disaster President Biden's administration has been and Democrat governance has been.
We're talking with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. Call in with questions and comments along the way. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Turning to inflation as measured by the Consumer Price Index, year-over-year inflation rates are lower this year than last, but inflation rates still higher than in years like 2018, 2019. What steps do you support in Congress to reduce inflation?
Reduced deficit spending would be the most important part. I mean, inflation is pretty easy to understand how it happens. It's too many dollars chasing too few goods. And when you have this massive spending spree on the part of the federal government, that obviously sparked this. We did not need more stimulus when President Biden came into office. We had to do something fast and massive during the pandemic to make sure the markets wouldn't collapse. But the economy is already roaring back in early 2021. The last thing we should have done is added trillions of dollars of deficit spending. And now you have President Biden proposing a budget that would add another $16, $17 trillion of debt to our national debt over the next 10 years. There's not one year in which he's projecting less than a $1.5 trillion deficit. I mean, grotesquely irresponsible. So, I mean, yeah, rates are down, but the fact of the matter is, as I said, a dollar you held at the start of the Biden administration is only worth 84 cents. That damage has been done. That the dollar has been devalued to that point, and as inflation continues, even at a lower rate, the value of the dollar continues to devalue.
So what is your take then on the position that the Federal Reserve is in to lower interest rates?
Well, from my standpoint, the primary problem, the primary cause of inflation is the deficit spending. The Federal Reserve obviously reacted to the massive inflation by increasing interest rates. I personally think the better way of doing that, again, too many dollars chasing too few goods, produce more goods. What you ought to be doing is rather than try and restrict the economy, you ought to be doing everything you can to grow the economy that's not inflationary. And the way you do that is you reduce the regulatory burden. You certainly don't increase people's taxes. I think what I'd like to simplify and rationalize our tax system. We're a long way from doing that. So to me, there's some pretty basic things we should do. Again, simplify, rationalize our tax system, and reduce the regulatory burden. I think that would release the animal spirits of an entrepreneurial economy, and that would be a better solution to inflation, increase the number of goods, as opposed to restrict the economy to bring down inflation.
So the deadline for filing income taxes is coming up here shortly. People of low income feel the most pain from higher inflation as a ratio of their total spending. Should Congress consider cutting taxes further for low income earners?
Well, first of all, you made a very important point there. So the very people the Democrats purport to represent, people at the lower end of the economic spectrum, are being harmed the most by their massive deficit spending. And, of course, they justify massive deficit spending 16 ways on Sunday. But the fact of the matter is it really hurts people across the income spectrum, but particularly the poor. And so, again, the solution would be reduce the massive deficit spending, encourage economic activity, encourage the production of more goods, encourage hiring of more people. That's what you do. What you don't want to do is more government welfare programs that we don't have the money to pay for, that encourage people not to enter the workforce, become dependent on government. And again, that's the direction we're at. We're heading in the exact opposite direction, and all the policies of the Democrats are just harming the very, very people they purport to represent.
So the House passed that $79 billion tax relief plan that is now in the hands of the Senate. It includes several of these business tax reductions. Do you support the bill?
No, because the price to pay to extend those business provisions is a massive increase in, again, another welfare program. I know it sounds good, child tax credit, but it decentivizes work, and it's just another long term over 10 years, about $800 billion additional program that we'd have to pay for with money we don't have. So, from my standpoint, when President Trump and Republicans passed tax reform, and I wasn't that nuts about the bill, it was better than the status quo, so I voted for it. But we took the average corporate tax rate, C corp rate, from about 21% down to, for large corporations, 10%, for smaller corporations, 14%. They've got tax relief. My concern right now, and again, I drove me nuts that we only gave tax relief to the pass-through businesses, 95% of them. That expires in 2026. We need to focus on that. We need to make sure that 95% of American businesses can remain competitive with the big guys. And so I'm working hard. I'm talking to Chairman Ryan White of the Finance Committee. I've got my own tax proposal where I take all those C-Corps, I turn them into pass-throughs. Tax business income at the ownership level. It would simplify, it would rationalize our tax system. That's what we need to do.
Let's go to Scott in Superior now. Hi, Scott, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. And I appreciate your being on the air, Mr. Johnson. That's good service to to the voters and the public. I do take issue with your analysis of the economy. And what the drivers, spending, that may be a driver, but bigger drivers are demographics and the retiring of the baby boomers and the shortage of labor. So that automatically, right, you need to pay workers more. There are fewer of them. There are help wanted signs posted everywhere. And that's a demographic thing. That has nothing to do with deficit spending. The other one is supply chain shortages that started during COVID, where supplies were in short, you know, were not available, and the cost of goods and manufacturing basic raw materials goes up. So those are big drivers. And deficit spending, hey, Trump and the Republicans have been part of that. The Bush administration was part of that. You know, nobody's innocent in that game.
Good. And Scott, thank you for that. Go ahead, Senator Johnson.
Well, first of all, I voted for the first COVID relief package, the CARES Act. We originally started talking about that at $750 billion within a couple of weeks. That got up $2.2 trillion, so I held my nose and voted for that. But that was the last one I voted for. So, we've got a real problem with the massive deficit spending by the Uniparty, and I've talked about that a lot. When it comes to labor, I absolutely agree that we need more workers. So let's not pay people not to work. One of the tragedies among many of President Biden and his Democrat colleagues in Congress, their open border policy, in addition to the fact that it's a clear and present danger in this nation, is it set back legal immigration reform. And we need to do that. I've written articles in the Wall Street Journal saying that we need to add about 2.6 million people per year to our labor pool just to grow at 3%. Now, that's not an exact calculation, but that's the order of magnitude that we need to increase our labor supply by. We're not doing it by birth rate, so that implies that we're going to have a legal immigration system, but one that's controlled, one that's tied toward economic growth, not one that allows, for example, Venezuela to open up its prisons and mental institutions and ship those people up here in America. So, no, that's it's awful what's happening from that standpoint. Supply chain, again, I think you have a rational tax system. If you a simple one, you have a lower burden in terms of regulatory burden, you can solve that supply situation pretty easily.
Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin with us as we discuss pressing issues in the economy and Congress as it returns from its April recess. You can be part of the discussion. Email ideas at WPR.org. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We check in with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. And thanks to Cynthia, who contacted us during a recent caller-only program asking to hear from Senator Johnson. We explore his positions on big issues before Congress as lawmakers return from their recess. And we hear from you, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Senator Johnson, turning to prices at the pump, Gas Buddy predicts the gas prices would peak in May with the switch from winter to summer gas and with the start of summer driving season. Do you have a plan to lower gas prices, or do you see a need for the federal government to intervene with gas prices?
Yeah, what I would do is I'd utilize the abundant fossil fuel resources in America. I wouldn't be engaging in a war on fossil fuel. I think it's pretty simple. I think as soon as President Biden entered office, you started seeing gasoline prices increase, and they're well over a dollar higher than they were when President Trump left office. So, again, just use what resources we have. Recognize that we're going to be a fossil fuel-based economy as far as the eye can see. Nothing we do here in terms of climate change is going to impact climate change at all. China, India, they're going to continue to use coal-fired plants. So, again, you have to recognize the reality of the situation. We've held, I think, 15 hearings in the Budget Committee on climate change and something. We're completely ignoring the fact we're $35 trillion in debt and everything's focused on climate change. But, one of the things I've learned out of those hearings is we spent probably about $6 trillion globally combating climate change. And I asked the witnesses, so have we made a dent? Have we done anything to turn the curve down? And the answer is no. So that was $6 trillion wasted. And we're going to continue to waste money if we continue to go down this path of trying to hold back the tides, which we won't be able to do. So, again, this is, from my standpoint, it is crazy what we're doing in the U.S. and globally to address climate change, which is always going to change, always will. I always point out that, because people don't realize this, but since the last glaciation period, you know, a blink of the eye in geologic time, about 20,000 years ago, the sea level in the Bay of San Francisco has increased 390 feet. There is nothing mankind could have done to prevent that. There's nothing we can prevent due to really change climate change other than potentially screw around with it and maybe hurt it, you know, more, do more harm than good. So
if we're going to be a fossil fuel-based economy for as long as we can see, we also have to navigate dependence on oil from other countries. And is America doing enough to reduce its dependence on oil from other countries?
Well, right now we're shooting ourselves in the foot. And, you know, rather than fully utilize our resources and let the economy drive innovation, listen, I'm not opposed to some government catalyst for research and development, but what we're doing now, forcing electric vehicles on everybody, people don't want them. You can see that just by the sales results. Also, you have to understand the full cost of these electric vehicles. I mean, for example, child labor mining cobalt in the Congo. The fact that, you know, there's all kinds of copper mining required for all these electrical needs, that the fact that we're not going to have the electric capacity to satisfy the goals of, you know, carbon-free and by 2050 or whatever this lunacy is. So
it sounds like you would say abandon, you would like to abandon all of those goals that relate to trying to reduce our carbon footprint. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. So carbon is 0.039% of our atmosphere. Man produces about 3% of that. The rest is 97% from nature. You're telling me that what man is producing in terms of CO2 is having an impact on our climate? I think it's crazy. Here with the Vostok ice core samples, over 440,000 years, you have five cycles, 22.7 degrees variation. And by the way, CO2 levels lagged the increase in temperature, which would indicate that as temperatures rise, it releases the CO2 in the ocean. So again, there are many reasons, like scientific reasons, that I am skeptical of this massive propaganda campaign of climate change. It's just trying to create fear to gain greater control over our lives, and it's extremely harmful.
Well, let's turn back to Congress as we talk with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. Since you last came on our program, Senator Mitch McConnell announced he would step down as the Republican caucus leader later this year. What is his legacy overseeing Republicans in the Senate since 2006?
Well, I think his greatest legacy is what he did after the tragic death of Justice Scalia, where he came out very quickly and said, let the American people decide the direction of the court. So we didn't confirm a justice at that point in time under Obama, and we let the American people decide, and they did by electing Donald Trump, who had three Supreme Court picks, and we turned the Supreme Court more conservative. So I think that's his greatest legacy. I think one of the reasons that he's decided to retire is the debacle over his negotiations on the border. Nobody in the Republican conference, as far as I'm aware, was looking for a massive immigration bill that weakened the president's authority to secure the border. But that's what McConnell negotiated. What we need is and this is what we were asking for, is an enforcement mechanism to force President Biden to use the authority he has to secure the border. The Supreme Court in 2018 decision said that current law exudes deference to the president to secure the border. President Trump used that to secure the border. President Biden used that exact executive authority to open it up. So he has the authority. He just doesn't want to use it because Democrats and President Biden want an open border. They caused this catastrophe, this clear and present danger to our nation. And so, again, I think that's one of the reasons that Leader McConnell decided that this is going to be his last Congress as leader. He blew that so badly.
As we wrap up here, I want to turn to Gaza. We saw the Israeli airstrike killing seven aid workers on Monday, the convoy of a World Central Kitchen. How should the U.S. respond to this attack?
I think we ought to be, from a standpoint, understanding that war is hell. And I suppose Biden can criticize Israel for, you know, killing seven innocents there. But what about the 10 Afghans that he killed in his awful withdrawal from Afghanistan? You know, again, war is hell. I'm not. These things are tragic. You know, every civilian death is tragic. We had Prime Minister Netanyahu teleconference into our Senate lunch a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about when you take a look at the ratio of civilian to combatant deaths, it's really at a historic low. So I think Israel is trying to bend over backwards to avoid civilian casualties. I mean, they could have leveled Gaza. They haven't done that. They've been trying to do this as surgically as they can. The problem is the Hamas hides behind women and children. They're the ones committing the war crimes, and they're the ones that start. There was a ceasefire. Hamas broke it in the most brutal and horrific way. So in the end, you got to let Israel do what Israel thinks it has to do to defend itself. And
Senator,
I'll also point out that
Senator, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us, Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.